T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The man starting for the Chicago White Sox is affiliated with my next guest. How about that transition? They host a wildly popular podcast together, but this man also calls many Brooklyn Net games, and you'll hear him later today on ESPN calling the Raptor Magic Game 1, a game that I will watch if the Nets win Game 1. If they lose Game 1, I'll be so turned off for the rest of the day, I probably won't do anything sports-related till I watch the Met game. And that is Ryan Rucco. Ryan, it's been too long. This is amazing that you're finally coming on now. You should have been on 6 years ago. How are you?
I'm great, Evan. Man, I know. I feel like it's good that we can finally take our Twitter interactions to the air, man. It's great to be with you, and I know you're riding high after the Isles last night. And probably no Embiid today. You got to be feeling great right now.
I'm excited, but I'm starting to get nervous. And let me start with a compliment, because I direct message this to you, but it's so true, and I can back this up with what I did yesterday morning. Yesterday morning, I was trying to pump myself up for the Nets being in the playoffs. I didn't really need to try. And you know what I went back and listened to? I listened to the last 2 minutes of your call with Sarah of the Sacramento game, because of all the games that the Nets won this year, and there's a lot of them, the Houston game, one of the Charlotte games. I don't know what it was. Maybe it's because it was 1 o'clock in the morning. That game just stands out with me, and you guys did. You basically exemplified how we all felt at 1 o'clock in the morning, half asleep, watching that miraculous comeback. So I got to hand it. That was a brilliant job calling the last few minutes of that comeback, man.
Thank you, man. Honestly, dude, there is no bigger compliment you could pay a play-by-play guy than that. And I always like to say, like, I look at TV play-by-play as the score to the movie, right?
Right.
Like, your sounds help the pictures come to life. Like, you still know what's going on if there's no audio, right? If you see the shark coming in Jaws, you know the shark's there, but it's the music that makes that moment come to life. If there was a flowery harp instead, you'd be like, what? This makes no sense. There's a shark coming. And so, like, you just want, like, when you have a moment like that, you just want your soundtrack to match up to what is actually transpiring in the pictures and make it come to life. And I could tell you, like, Sarah and I are sitting there. Our full bodies were into that. By the end of that, I was, like, standing up, getting everything into it at the end of that game, because I think you're right, man. I think it's late at night. It was a shocking comeback. And you also felt the pressure of that road trip. The
yes.
First couple of games had not gone the way that you wanted them to go. You knew what was still ahead on the road trip and that the playoffs were in peril. So everything just made it such a fun moment, man. I'm glad that you stuck it out that night and were able to enjoy it.
You kidding me? I mean, I will never shut a game. The only time I'll shut a game off is if it's mathematically impossible. If they're down 35 with 5 minutes to go, then I'll say, all right, I'm out. And I put it over the Houston game, and it's funny. I remember who called every game. See, I started to learn you and I in schedule. So the Rocket game wasn't you, because you were doing an ESPN game that night. Ian was God knows where he was, getting ready for football. And so Chris Carino went over from radio, if I'm not mistaken, and did the TV of the Rocket game. But the reason why that game doesn't match the King game, time of year, was a lot earlier, and it was almost a cherry on top game. It was one of those games where, oh my God, I can't believe they won. But I think you said it, Ryan, that Sacramento game was a game you felt they needed to win, because the season started to feel as if it was slipping away. We knew the West Coast trip was going to be tough. They had gotten off to a bad start. They had a big lead in Oklahoma City. They blew that game. And so I think it was the pressure of the moment and the time of day and the time of year that made that probably the most satisfying win of the year.
I agree, man. I mean, there are a few games this year that were like, wow. You know, even like winning in Denver early in the season, right?
Yeah.
That was like, that was a tremendous win. The comeback against Charlotte after they had blown, well, I mean, you had the overtime game at Barclays, but then after you had blown the lead against Charlotte the first game after the break, to then come back with D'Lo's heroics, huge win. The Houston game, incredible finish, huge win. But to me, I agree. The Sacramento one, first of all, biggest comeback in franchise history. Second of all, where they were, because if you looked at those first three quarters, you know, with the context of the previous two games, you're thinking like, oh my gosh, this is slipping away. This was a game they had to win against an opponent they should beat, and they didn't show up. They're down 25. What's going on? And everything kind of turned after that. And I do think, you know, the reaction in the locker room after that and seeing the energy, you know, people always like to ask me like, oh, what was it like on the plane after the game, after certain losses and wins? And what I always say is like 95% of the time, you really can't tell a difference in what transpired in the game because it's just part of the daily routine for these guys. But that was one of those games where you felt that energy from the team, the coaching staff, the training staff, not only right after the game getting on a plane, but you felt it the next morning in the hotel, even the off days in L.A. leading up to the Laker game. Like, that was one that just resonated, and I do think gave them some energy to finish through the remainder of that road trip and then the final stretch of the season.
Do you remember off the top of your head how many net games you called this year on Yes Network? Do you know the number?
I think it's 27 or 28. 28.
Okay. 20. I would have guessed in the mid 20s. It's funny how sometimes I remember each crew based on the way the game went. Like I remember who, like you, right. you jump out at me in that game, Carino. Funny how you remember that sometimes.
Well, yeah, because and you know that's why we always say, Evan, we're like you always want the team, if you're calling a local game, you always want them to win because the fan base thinks you sound way better during a win than they do during a loss. Like you all of a sudden, if you're stuck in the middle of a 10-game losing streak, they're like, man, I thought Rucco was a good play-by-play guy, but he's kind of rough, isn't he? you don't want to be in the middle of one of those stretches.
It's funny. I watched every game this year. I watch all games, but there was one game I had to listen to just because I was flying to Florida, and I actually saw the Nets Heat game in Miami they got blown out at, which you call if memory serves correct. But the game before that, the Charlotte game, I listened to the entire game in the car, and Bob Huesler, who does a fine job, called the game, and the Nets, obviously, they didn't play well. They were behind the whole game. I said to Bob a few weeks later, I said, Bob, I hated you that night because you were delivering me this awful message. I mean, so it's all your fault, clearly.
It's true. It's exactly right, Evan. You know what else happens, too? The other thing that's it always happens from fan reaction is if you're doing a national broadcast and the road team is winning, you know, or the road team's doing good things or whatever, and you're getting up for them, but then the home team starts coming back, people are like, oh, you know, why are they so much more excited for the home team? It's like, no, one of them has a crowd behind it,
right.
The other one doesn't. Like, it just sounds different, you know?
No question. We're talking to Ryan Rucco, who's called a ton of net games on the Yes Network. He's got the Raptor Magic game on ESPN later today. All right, you've seen a lot of Philadelphia. You've seen a lot of Philadelphia against the Nets. I'm not ready to say Joel Embiid is not playing. I know he's listed as doubtful, but until he's not on the court at 2:30, I'm still skeptical. But to you, it's obviously going to make a big difference. We saw what Embiid did to Jared Allen and the Nets all year. But in your opinion, how much of a difference do we see in Philadelphia when Joel Embiid is not out there compared to when he is out there?
I really do think it's night and day, man. I do. And I know that they still have a plethora of talent. And if you told me they don't have Embiid, but you know what, they're going to go ahead and win this game anyway without him, it's not like I'd be shocked by that. They have plenty of good players on that team, especially in that starting lineup. But, I mean, they're 8-10 without him this year. If you look specifically to what they do defensively with and without Embiid, it's just as important as what they do offensively with and without Embiid. He's their personality, you know. And the other part of it is, if you look at this specific matchup, you know, Evan, better than anybody watching the Nets, they have trouble with those burly centers, you know, whether it's a Vucevic, a Nurkic, a Kanter, or Embiid, who's obviously in a completely different class than almost anybody on the planet. You know, they have real trouble just even trying to temper what those guys do. And we've seen it in this specific matchup. On the flip side, Philadelphia has a really hard time with good lead guards and stopping them. And the Nets, I'd say right now, have three they feel good about with the way Karras has played over these last couple of weeks. And Brett Brown, a couple of weeks ago, I was doing that Nets Sixer game. He said, man, if we play them in the playoffs, you know, I don't love the way we match up with them because of our inability to stop their guards. And Kenny's thing was like, well, I feel like the Sixers are a bad matchup because we can't stop Embiid and their bigs. But if you take away Embiid, all of a sudden that mismatch, that area of weakness for Brooklyn is no longer the concern that it was in this matchup. So I think it's a huge deal. And I think if you're the Nets and you really want to make this a series and you want to have a shot at winning it, you got to take advantage in any game that Embiid misses.
Oh, absolutely. To me, the lead guards, you hit on it, and the bench heads that they have. I mean, the Nets are just a deeper team than Philadelphia.
It's a big difference, man. There's a huge difference with the bench. And obviously, Philadelphia has completely reworked their bench throughout the course of this season, so it does look a lot different than it did. But it's night and day between the Nets and the way they can rely on their bench in Philadelphia. Now, obviously, in the playoffs, that's not as big because you are going to increase the minutes of your starters and you're going to maybe cut your rotation a little shorter. But it becomes even more of a factor if there's no Embiid, because now Philadelphia is diving even deeper into their depth. And the one other thing I'd say, Evan, even though the Nets aren't a team that forces a particularly high amount of turnovers, we know that Philadelphia can get loosey-goosey with the ball at certain times. They had 28 turnovers that one game against Brooklyn earlier in the year. And so, you know, any sort of wrinkle in their rotations also can affect that sort of stability aspect. And I think, you know, that's where the Nets need to take advantage and see if they can get that team to unwind a little bit with all the pressure that the Sixers have. I'd say second most to Toronto going into this postseason.
Yeah, and there's just this sense that if they could win a game, game one or game two, that maybe those personalities would turn on each other.
That
Jimmy Butler's going to complain he's not getting the ball enough. And, you know, there could be kind of a chaotic feel to this team if they face any adversity early on.
I agree with that. You know, I mean, it's no secret that, you know, Embiid and Simmons are not what Lowry and DeRozan were in Toronto, right? Like, I mean, I don't think there's, you know, it's not something that's a problem for them, but it's not like those guys are the complete same personality. You throw in the Butler aspect, and specifically basketball-wise, Evan, I can tell you just from talking to Brett Brown throughout the regular season, having several Sixers games on ESPN, he talked about how even though their style didn't necessarily fit what Butler was used to, you know, Sixers constantly pass the ball. I think they've been one or two the last 2 years in the amount of passes they've made. Butler was much more used to, you know, pick and roll. He's in control, ball in his hands. You know, this is a much different style for him. But Brett Brown acknowledged he knows come postseason time, they are going to have to rely on Butler a little bit more. You know, that his style and the way he's used to playing becomes a little bit more prevalent at this time of year. So I think that's another intriguing aspect of this with the Sixers, is how do they end up using Butler relative to the way they did in the regular season. And one other aspect, and this is a little sneaky, underrated thing, you know, the Sixers lost one of their key assistant coaches to St. Joe's just a couple of weeks ago. And you may think, like, okay, well, you know, do we really take time to evaluate losing an assistant coach? Like, there's a lot of other things to do. But when it's the guy who's in charge of most of your scouts, that's a significant loss at this time of year trying to scramble and reshuffle your deck and your routine. And I'm not saying it's going to, you know, tilt the scale one way or another, but if it's already a teeny, teeny difference between what's going on in this series and Embiid's injury, it could just be another thing that the Sixers have to deal with.
Talking to Ryan Rucco, we'll be calling the Orlando-Toronto game on ESPN at 5 o'clock. And speaking of that series, look, the Raptors won 58 games, and they did that while maintenancing Kawhi Leonard half the year. Maintenance day here, maintenance day there. They still won 58 games. But the Magic finishing 42-40 is an incredible accomplishment considering where they were a few months ago. And I know that teams like Milwaukee and Toronto and even Boston, they haven't been playing for much over the last month and a half, so maybe it's not fair to look at the way they've played recently. But do you think that the Magic could actually make this a series considering how well they've played over the last 2 months?
You know, it's interesting because obviously, like, that's sort of the mindset I get into when I'm preparing, right? When you have one team that's the obvious favorite, it's like, can you build the case for the team that's, you know, the obvious underdog? And I think the thing with the Magic is they will make you beat them, right? That's what Steve Clifford's teams do. They're going to crash the defensive glass. They're not going to turn the ball over. They're going to be very good and stingy defensively. And so if you got Toronto in a situation where they kind of got outside themselves, you know, the Magic, I don't believe, will beat themselves. There's a huge disparity in the top-end talent, of course, between these teams. But the one thing Orlando has that a lot of teams don't is they have the length to match up with some of the difficult players that the Raptors present. So, you know, Jonathan Isaac, he did a nice job against Pascal Siakam during the regular season. Aaron Gordon did a terrific job against Kawhi Leonard during the regular season. So I think if you're going to point to certain things, it's Orlando's defense, really good. You know, they don't turn the ball over, and they do have some wings who can match up with the difficult players that Toronto presents. You know, I think it'd be very, very difficult to put a huge scare in Toronto just because the Raptors are so talented. But Orlando's playing well enough, especially the defensive end, that I think it could be tougher than people think for Toronto.
You know, I know Kyle Lowry still has the playoff baggage questions, but because Kawhi is there and he's new and you've got a brand new coach and Coach Nurse, do you think all of that talk about it's the Raptors, they known to choke? Now, usually it's against LeBron, he's not walking through that door, but do you think that's kind of eliminated because of how different this team is compared to the past Raptor teams?
I do, man. I because if you think about it, like Kawhi Leonard's not thinking, oh, I can't win at this time of year. Danny Green's not thinking, oh, I can't win at this time of year. You know, Marcus Gasol, you know, even, you know, what he was able to do in Memphis with this Grizzlies team, I would qualify as exceeding expectations and a lot of postseason success. And then you look at Pascal Siakam, and he wasn't really a critical piece at any point during, you know, his first couple of years to what he is now for this team. So you couple that with Nick Nurse, who I think is a really impressive head coach. I don't think that the majority of these players will feel any sort of panic because they don't have the same context of experience of losing here. However, the one factor you can't necessarily account for is the fan base does. And sometimes when you can feel your fan base getting tense and you can feel all of a sudden the building getting worried, then sometimes it can affect you as a player. And so that would be the one thing I'd say is, like, if all of a sudden Orlando's, you know, let's say they take game one, then do some of those guys who weren't here start to feel the context of what the building is experiencing?
Oh,
and
no
then
doubt.
It could become a factor. But Evan, I think if you look at this Raptors team, man, they are no doubt primed for, and not just because of the LeBron James, but that's a factor, they are no doubt primed for a deeper run than they've been on over these last few years. I really, really believe that. Maybe it doesn't happen. The East is really good and it's much improved, but the Raptors should feel great about the team they're bringing into these playoffs.
No, I'm with you, and I know it's chalky to say it, but I mean, I fully expect Milwaukee-Toronto in the conference finals. I think it'll be a hell of a series. And what's interesting out West is how, and I do think it's a good thing for the Rockets, that they are actually in line to face the Warriors in the second round. Now, first, they got to take advantage and beat the Utah Jazz, who very quietly won 50 games, so they had a hell of a year. But do you agree that the Rockets actually have a better chance to knock off Golden State earlier than later?
I do. I feel that way. And I know a lot of people thought, like, oof, you know, if you're Houston, like, you wanted that two or three so you don't have to play Golden State until late. But the reality is, like, Golden State, it's not like there's this incredible factor of attrition with Golden State's first and second round series usually. You know, it's not like, oh, if you could have caught Golden State in the conference finals, they would have already had to play 14 gritty games. Like, that's not usually the way the first and second round go for the Warriors. So I almost think if you're the Rockets, who are more likely to play some tighter, closer series, you'd rather catch Golden State when you're fresher earlier, you know, when hopefully there's more of a chance that you have Chris Paul healthier and fresher. And for me, even though last year, you know, some personnel did change for the Rockets from last year when they clearly gave the Warriors a scare, I think there are two things that, you know, you feel good about compared to last year for this year with the Rockets. One, you know, Chris Paul did a lot of different things fitness-wise, training-wise, to try and address the hamstring issue. So you feel like that's hopefully a thing of the past. We'll see, but at least right now you feel good about it. But two, the Warriors have this mythos to them where you don't just have to beat, you know, the talent on the floor. You have to beat the Warriors. And, you know, you almost have to see that, oh, they bleed too.
Right.
And I do think the Rockets' experience last year, even though they lost the series, should give them some confidence where they can get on the floor and say, hey, we can really do this, and believe that they can.
We're talking to Ryan Rucca. Now, we do this to Ian all the time because Joe and I are always fascinated by it, and I'm very fascinated right now by you in this regard. Do you know your schedule for the next 3 weeks? Do you have everything mapped out, what games you're calling? Are you doing Yankee games? Because I tend to think when they go on the West Coast, we get a lot more Ryan Rucca. So do you know what you're doing the next 2 weeks?
So I know what my – I don't have – my Yankee stuff starts at the end of April. And then it'll be heavy from like end of April through, August. And then Michael, and Bob and Meredith take everything in September.
Right.
But I, for playoffs, what's kind of like fun and interesting, dude, is we literally, cause our windows at ESPN, they're like, you know, they're a little different. So you don't just necessarily stay with one series,
right,
you know?
Right.
So, We literally right now, I know I'll have a game next week, either Friday or Saturday, but I don't know which yet. I'll find out probably Monday or Tuesday which game I'll have for playoffs. And then the following week, it's all up for grabs because it depends on how many game sixes we get.
Right.
You know, and then the week after that, I know I'll have a second round game on either the Thursday or the Friday, but I won't know until. So like this time of year, literally what I do is I block off, like, you know, just like dates, and it's like, okay, you know, and you know, my guys at the Yankees are cool about it too, where if like I have a studio date and I'm like, I think I could do this one, but if they have a playoff game, if this series goes to the six, I might have to change, you know, and they'll work with you. But like, you're kind of on guard. Normally I would say I have my schedule planned out,
right,
like for the next like 3 months, you know, but playoffs, man, it's all like you got to be on your toes, just ready to see where you end up going.
Yeah, there's a split. A lot of ESPN, a lot of TNT. You got the ABC games. You got NBA TV. It's all over the place. So it's possible you're in Brooklyn for game six. Is that a possibility?
I guess that's a possibility, although I think their game six would be on the Thursday, right?
Yeah, it would be Thursday the 25th, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that is Turner.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm pretty sure. Right. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's Turner because I think our, without knowing for sure, I think our game six or seven fall between Friday and Sunday. And then, you know, I mean, I think we'd need them all, our game sixes maybe on the Friday. But, you know, some of the changes too, Evan, if like you have a bunch of early series,
right,
then the windows you had for game sevens turn into game one, you know? And like, gotcha. So, like, it really is fluid, like, to figure out. And you know, I'll try and miss the ESPN schedule, get to Barclays at some point, maybe see if I can hop on Yes for a halftime show or something during the playoffs and get involved there. But it's like, it's totally, this time of year, you just kind of have to be like, okay, like, I know with ESPN around the weekend, let's see what happens. I got to be free.
Well, have fun. We'll be watching, and I very much appreciate you coming on. It was a lot of fun, Ryan.
Evan, great to be with you, man. Long time coming, dude. And, you know, I hope that you are able to watch my Magic Raptor game after the first one. We'll put it that way.
Me too. Thank you, Ryan. Have a good broadcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.